Good evening, folks. This is The Weird Part, and I'm your host, Vincent Trewell. My next guest probably needs no introduction here, but I'll do it anyway. Ashley Hilt is a paranormal investigator, researcher, and probably the hardest working person in paranormal podcasting right now. Welcome back, Ashers.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. I don't know why you keep insisting that I come back, but here I am.
Friend of the show and always welcome here. Yes. But yes, you've been really busy and you've been doing some really interesting things. Just right off the top of your head, what would you like to tell us about first off?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the most time consuming bit that I've been doing. So I already have a weekly podcast on Wednesdays, We Talk Weird, where I do not take breaks. There is a new episode out every Wednesday. And back in, I think it was August, I had learned that my co-host had intended to take a short-term break from the show. Well, this turned into a long-term break, and I needed to get a new co-host. So I had done an application process where I talked to so many people. Actually, it was kind of overwhelming, the amount of people that applied, and just emotionally overwhelming. I didn't think that many people wanted to be a part of something that I was creating. And I had so many good applicants that I struggled really to pick one. So I decided to, you know, true Asher's fashion, well, give them all a chance for the most part. Not all of them, of course, but a good chunk of them. I decided to create three new spinoff shows on top of my weekly Wednesday show. So that's what we've been doing. In an attempt to not overwhelm myself, I decided to go ahead and record the seasons ahead of time and backlog them, and then they're being released as their own seasons underneath the On Wednesdays We Talk Weird umbrella. So you still get the good quality of the Wednesday show every week, on top of these new bonus episodes now. And I just released the first show, Beasts and Beyond, which is basically very similar to the Wednesday show, except the Wednesday show is a variety show. Plus we have a lot of personalization to do, a lot of banter, and we do like the weekly weird news and things like that. Beasts and Beyond doesn't have any of that. It's just a case study of different creatures, and creature can kind of be whatever you want it to be. We've got some really interesting shows coming up. You know, I've got one girl that hosts with me, Zool, and her specialty is like horror movie monsters. So we'll be talking about the lore of horror movie monsters, but the first episode of the whole season was the Kentucky Goblin. So still a variety, but it has a specific goal in mind. And what I like about this is that there is a variety of co-hosts. However, you're going to hear the same people every season, but I like the fact that you get the different perspectives and then they have a say in the topic. So whatever it is that they're presenting is something that they're obviously passionate about. And I think that passion is very important when you're delivering it. And any type of creative capacity, I think it shines through. If you don't care about the subject, people know.
Oh, yes. I'd say that's pretty easy to pick up. I did get a chance to catch the Beasts and Beyond episode with the Kentucky Goblins, and it was excellent. It was a very interesting case, and you handled it really well.
Yeah, the that one is with, well, that's, of course, I love that case. It's one that I can tell on a whim. And not like the back of my hand. It's a personal one to me. I can't really tell you why. I just like a good alien hillbilly family shootout. who does it, you know? But, you know, of course, it wouldn't have been nearly as good without Jimothy Strange, who happens to be the co-host for that episode. Who, man, that guy's voice, it's like butter. I
yes,
can't even
he's
compete.
Got a voice for radio.
Well, he does radio, so he's kind of got the advantage over the rest of us. But he'll be with me at the, I don't know when this is coming out, but he'll be with me at the Frogman Festival here in Ohio. So
yes, if you hadn't brought it up, I was certainly going to bring it up. Speaking of creatures, you've got quite a big deal going on in Loveland, Ohio.
I do. Well, I think that you know, the Loveland Frog is starting to gain a lot of popularity, not just because they have this monster festival surrounding it. Loveland had kind of started to embrace this creature. And for anybody that doesn't really know what it is. I'll give a quick background. Allegedly, a police officer saw a bipedal frog type humanoid cross the road. And well, I mean, that's it, really. That's most of the story. We are doing an episode on it before the Frogman Festival for Beasts and Beyond. So that is coming out within the next week here. But this has just kind of continued to grow, and this little know nothing in the middle of nowhere creature has gained popularity across the entire country. So cartographer Jeff Craig, who's the inventor of the map in black, he also does the Hidden Ohio map, which basically just maps out high strangeness all over Ohio, and then of course map in black is the whole United States. Took an opportunity and ran with it. He decided to introduce everybody to the Frogman who doesn't know already in the form of this festival. And last year was the of course the first one that we did, and God, it did really well. For all the events that I physically went to last year, I think that was probably the largest one that I participated in, and I expect very much the same thing this year. It's going to be even bigger and better than before, with all kinds of crazy activities. He's got a parade that's happening now. I mean, it's just going to be insane. So he's invited me back to be the MC of the event. Then, of course, I'm going to give my own presentation about other frog humanoids from around the world, because it turns out the Loveland frog isn't the only one.
And I heard you say that, and that was news to me. I didn't know there was other humanoid frogs around the world. That was very interesting.
Yeah, there's actually, I didn't either until a couple months ago, and it is a thing, and it's not just America either. They're international. Some very interesting stories coming to light, and I'm excited to talk about them. Now, I did try to here's what I tried to do. So the end game of the frog, the original Loveland Frogman story, is that the police officer, one of his police buddies, had actually shot and killed the thing, which ended up being a pet iguana with its tail removed or something. And this was all just blown out of proportion. Well, I had picked up a book later on down the line. It's called It Came from Ohio, and it's by a guy named James Renner. And in James's book, now James, I noticed he writes a lot of true crime. Like, this was out of his wheelhouse. Like, he doesn't, like, some people just push out book after book. He doesn't talk about this stuff. And he had mentioned in his book that he actually talked to the original police officer. His name's Ray Shockey, and talked to Ray Shockey's parents. And what they had said was that, well, Ray did actually see a bipedal frog humanoid, and they just made up the iguana story because he was sick of being made fun of. And
That
so
sounds remarkable. That rings true to me. That,
exactly.
his credibility wasn't, raised by seeing a humanoid frog.
Right, and this was the 1970s, in rural Ohio. It wasn't the cool thing to do to see a bipedal frog. So I tracked down Ray Shockey,
Wow.
and I wrote him a letter, sent him a good old-fashioned snail mail, and of course invited him to come to the Frog Band Festival. Or at minimum, invited him to just, like, listen, Ray, tell me your story. Tell me what happened. Was it just an iguana with its tail qu cut off? What were you just ashamed of having experienced something like this? What is the definitive answer here? Let's lay the mystery, to rest. And I was hoping to be able to get him to come be a part of the Frogman Festival. He unfortunately skirted my letter. He did not respond. So
Yeah.
maybe one day. But I'm hopeful that maybe he'll just show up. I gave him all the details. He knows when it is and where it is. I'm hoping that he just shows up, and that would be fantastic. So that's why, that, like I said, I'm waiting on that to see if that
That would be
happens.
great. I mean, that'd be a chance for him to kind of lay this to rest in his own life, which is, think about how old that man must be and how much of his life has been affected by seeing this thing.
Oh yeah, he's
And how it
74,
came
I think,
all
is
around.
what he is.
Wow. Okay,
So
so he was fairly young when this happened.
yeah,
And
well,
it,
yeah.
wow, covered the next 40 years of his life with, frog stuff. Wow.
Right.
That would
Right.
There's a number of people who've had these kind of encounters and reported them, and it became the defining thing that happened to them in their life. And that's got to be a lot to deal with, you
Yeah,
know?
absolutely. Well, and especially, if it was just an iguana, I mean, that's just as important. Is it fun? No, of course I want it to be a frog humanoid. Why wouldn't I?
Oh, yeah.
But even if that is the story, I think it's very important to settle, settle it up. That's the story. Of course, nobody wants to not have fun with it, but you can still have fun with it, even knowing the truth of the matter. There was still that encounter in the 1950s with the businessman who saw three of them.
Yes.
One of them was wearing a cloak. I'm sorry, they were all wearing like cloaks, but one of them was brandishing a type of wand that had like sparks coming out of it. And then it wasn't just Ray Shockey at that time. There was a farmer who claimed to have seen this thing, claimed that it attacked his cattle, of course. There are other people that come out of the woodwork. I had an encounter relayed to me. It was probably 2 days before the Frogman Festival last year. And this is just a local who says that him and his friends were down by the river and they were doing what teenagers do. They saw this weird rock in the water and they said, "Hey, that kind of looks like a giant frog." They went to go throw another rock at it, and well, lo and behold, it stood up and hopped away. So,
Man,
there's more to it.
my courage would have been tested. Man,
They were
that would
very
be just
afraid, yeah.
disturbing, you know.
Yeah, I think they left that area afterwards. I don't think they stayed. But no, they were very excited about it. So, I mean, it does, people do still report. And again, this is a phenomena that we see across the whole world. So I wouldn't be surprised that Ray Shockey saw what he saw.
Oh, yeah.
And in order to, skirt ridicule, let his buddy help him make up the story to kind of, I think the other police officer saw it also. And I think he did probably shoot at it. But I think that, the other guy was like, it was just an iguana. Like in his mind, that's what he told himself.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's probably for a lot of people kind of a buffer. You
Yeah.
know, if you really see something like that, you know, that's going to be very disturbing to your whole worldview, you know?
Oh, yeah,
And,
absolutely.
you know, and not to just rubber stamp, you know, whatever the cops say, but there is a different level to me of, you know, consequence. If you make an official government report that I saw this and while I was working and, you know, this happened, it becomes an official document and you're putting your name on that. And that carries to me more weight than some other reports, you know? And that'll follow you for, well, the rest of your life, you know?
Oh,
And if
yeah.
you're saying you shot your gun at it, I mean, you're really saying something. You're saying, I did this and this thing was real. And, you know, you can't take that back. And that gives it a significant amount of credibility to me.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I love the Loveland Frog. Of course, it's local to me. I went down to, it's kind of a joke, but really I'd never been to Loveland, Ohio. It's only about 40 minutes away. Me and my previous co-host Pato, we decided to take a trip down there. And we did, and we tried to track down roughly where the Shockey sighting had taken place, but it was difficult to do. It took place right outside of an old boot factory, but it was right. So the river, the Miami River, has like a road that runs, alongside it. And we couldn't really find the location where the boot factory had been at the time. But let me tell you, that whole area, you'd never guess there was a frog humanoid living there. It's very gentrified. It's kind of nice. I mean, everything is brand new. That you have a cutesy little town, but it's not like a historic little town. I mean, everything is brand new.
They kind
And
of built it right on top of the swamp, or
basically,
wow.
pretty much, I mean, right there along the river, it's just a whole little town, and there's a nice little parks and rec area. There were people out and about everywhere. Loveland, Ohio is known for its the Loveland Castle, actually. And that's been around. This way predates Frogman. Some guy with a Knights of the Round Table obsession decided to start a Boy Scouts project and had them all build up this castle. And I think that started happening in like the 1940s.
Wow.
But now there is a legit castle that you can go see and tour in Loveland, and it's really neat. I mean, it's definitely worth it. It's like $5 to get in. It's, you spend an afternoon. It is nice. So it's not like it doesn't have its own history to it or anything else besides the Loveland Frog. It's definitely got a lot going for it. But yeah, nowadays I can't imagine that there are any frogman dens in the area.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Now, something like that. I mean, do you think that it is a, like, it's here all the time and we just, like, it has some tunnel or something? Or do you think it comes from somewhere else? Like, it's not here all the time and it kind of
Yeah.
comes here from time to time.
That's a good question. No, I don't think it's terrestrial. Especially with the like some of the stories I'm going to share during the presentation. One of them involves somebody having a UFO encounter, and while they're having the UFO encounter, they can actually see through the windows of the craft, and what they describe are, well, guess what? Like frog humanoids in cloaks.
Oh, wow.
So just a lot of the stuff that you come across with these creatures is very out of this world, for the lack of a better phrasing. Especially with the businessman situation. I mean, whatever those things were like definitely sentient and doing some type of ritual or something. I don't know what the hell they were
Yeah.
doing, but they were
They opened the portal or something and ended up on
right.
the
It's
wrong
their
side of
fault.
it.
That's why we see them now. I don't think that it lives here. Can there be massive frogs out in nature somewhere? I'm sure. Can there be massive frogs that are walking upright and are, the original Loveland frog was only like 4 foot tall. Wasn't that big, but that's still pretty big for
It's
a
enormous for a
frog.
frog, yes. And disturbing, I mean, especially walking on its hind legs.
And it really looked more. It rather amphibious is, which I guess are just frogs. It is more of as a better term than just frog, but still, I mean, that's still pretty unbelievable. So for one to be able to walk on two legs and carry itself well, I don't buy that in nature. I'd have to see it to believe it,
Walking upright is so rare,
It is, yeah.
and everything gets scary when it walks up like we do.
Yeah.
You take just a regular cat or dog and have it walking around on its hind legs, and it becomes, kind of disturbing.
Oh, watch a deer do it. It's horrifying.
Oh man, you've happened to see that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's very scary. It's intimidating, that's for sure. You're like, is this a not deer? No, it's actually very normal. They will go bipedal sometimes. They don't do it for long stretches. Like they can't just walk. But it's like when you see a dog, right, walking on its hind legs, it's not normal, right? But they're not able to sustain it.
Yeah, exactly. They can only do it for a few steps, but it will get a reaction.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of segueing there. You do cryptozoological studies and you go out and look for these things. What do you think is likely just a regular undiscovered animal, would you say?
Do you mean like Bigfoot? Some people think it's interdimensional. Some people think it's flesh and blood.
That'd be one example, yeah.
Yeah.
Something that's like, I have a couple of ideas in mind, but things that
Okay.
are not, there's no spaceship, there's no portal,
Gotcha.
there's no, ultra high tech or mystical way that they're coming here. They're always here. We just haven't discovered them. The
Yeah.
ones I would throw out there would be the Tasmanian tiger.
Ooh, yeah. That's a favorite.
That's that one, I think, probably does exist. They just, because they have it on film, that it used to exist. It's just the consensus is that it's gone extinct. But it's tough to ever say that they got the last one. You know what I mean? I think those could very well be out there in Tasmania. And, they would be very rare, but still around. I think they discovered within the last couple of years a species of pileated woodpecker, the great big ones that they had said were extinct, but no, then they showed up. So it's, they can live kind of under the radar. The catch, of course, is that you almost never see them. The one that, go
Oh, go
ahead.
ahead.
The one that always sticks with me as being kind of a human-sized hairy primate, kind of like a Bigfoot, though I don't think it's nearly as, as huge, but is the Orang Pendek in the Isle of Java in Indonesia. And
Oh,
it
yeah.
lives in the rainforest, and it's said to be a like an orangutan, but walks upright like a human. And that to me wouldn't be even super controversial. I mean, that could happen, that could exist. The catch is nobody ever sees it. Even the indigenous people like never see it. I think it was Josh Gates on his cable show that I think it was him, maybe someone else, but I think it was him that went to Indonesia and went to the rainforest and hired a native guide to go and look for the Orang Pendek. And the guide could only take them to this village where a guy who had once seen the Orang Pendek could tell him about it. But the guide had never seen it. Nobody there except this guy had seen it. It was super rare, even where it lived, which is in the absolute middle of nowhere. And that way, that's how something, to me, how something undiscovered would still exist. Because it'd be so rare to see it.
Oh,
So if you're
yeah.
seeing them a lot more often, then I kind of wonder how they could really be here all the time. It's my take on it.
Yeah, people like Bigfoot. Bigfoot's sexy. Something like the ivory-billed woodpecker's not sexy, but it is cryptozoology, and a lot of people like to overlook that. I get into a lot of arguments with people about what a cryptid is, and they don't like the fact that I am, look, we can only go based off of the men who created cryptozoology, which was Ivan T. Sanderson and Bernard Heuvelmans. And Heuvelmans, when he wrote in his book, oh God, I can't remember the name of it, but there's a particular book that he wrote where he outlined what was cryptozoological, and there were like five different factors of what that is, and one of those things is displaced species. So in the United States, we would refer to that as like the Eastern Cougar, right?
Yes.
They say that there are no cougars on the East Coast. That is honestly, it's a lie. I don't know why they don't just accept the fact that they're here. Anytime there is one found locally in the East Coast, they just say, oh, it was displaced or it traveled or blah, 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 blah. Whatever. There's no breeding population living in the East Side of the United States. Extinct species that are that do actually end up kind of being resurrected through their breeding habits. When we mark an animal as extinct, you're right, we can't tag and track every single one of them. So when we mark something as extinct, we are saying that there is not a large enough population for them to sustain their species any longer, because you'd need a pretty decent amount to be able to breed without inbreeding, causing issues and things like that. But we have seen animals grow away from being extinct to being current, and we're watching that happen right now with the ivory-billed woodpecker. There is a whole group of people that is trying to pull it out of extinction because they claim that they have been physically observing these things. Something like a woodpecker is a lot harder to find.
Oh, yeah.
It's small compared to the Tasmanian tiger, which I also believe is still very much around, just in a very small population. There was a video that I had seen, I think it was last year. Now, granted, it was on TikTok, but it was of a creature kind of roaming around the streets of the city there, and
Oh,
my
wow.
God, if it didn't look exactly like a Tasmanian, and it was pretty clear, all things considered. But I mean, it had that weird tail that they have, that really straight, kind of strange
Yes.
tail that they had. It had the stripes. I mean,
It doesn't look like anything else. Yeah.
no, it doesn't, right? It has very distinct features. And when you see those distinct features on these pictures, these videos, I mean, what else can it be,
Yeah.
I believe
I'm
it
surprised to
is
see
still
one in
around.
the urban environment. That's interesting.
Yes, it was just kind of walking around. You know, some people were driving around in their car and took a video of it, and you know, then it kind of blew up because people were saying it's a Tasmanian tiger. And you know, TikTok is, it's a hard one, right? People hear TikTok, they groan. I get it. But considering the modern day era and how big TikTok is, we're bound to get some legitimate videos come through.
Oh
And
yes, today's world, people aren't gonna, send a videotape to the New York Times or something.
yeah, it
Probably
just
not
didn't work
gonna
that way.
go that way. Yeah.
Right. And you know, this guy happened to take a video of it. I think he just thought it was some type of weird dog or something. And was like, "Hey guys, look at that dog." And everybody's like, "That's a Tasmanian tiger." So, you know, I think that things like that are definitely still around. I do think there is a, I think Bigfoot is flesh and blood, and that's also growing increasingly unpopular. And it could be because I have a bias, you know, when I got into this stuff, that's all I was into. I was only into cryptozoology. I didn't believe in, you know, the woo. I wasn't here for that. I was very skeptical. And anybody that had brought up, I mean, I remember the first time I was ever faced with anybody claiming that Bigfoot was anything other than an animal. And it was so ridiculous, you know, I just kind of laughed it off. And it was on a forum. It was on cryptomundo.com, actually. And the guys in the
Oh, that's
comments,
a
and
good place, yeah. It
yeah,
was.
and
Yeah, I don't think it's as active anymore. I don't
it's
know.
not, but you can still get on there and read it. But that's what I did as every morning as a teenager. I woke up and checked Cryptomundo, you know, because at that time in my life, I wanted to be a cryptozoologist. That was that, and so yeah, the guy presents, you know, this woo Bigfoot story, and everybody in the comments are just like, "Yeah, guy, you know, I want what you're having," you know, making fun of him and stuff. It wasn't taken seriously. We don't see that now. Now we see, if you don't believe in some woo aspect of Bigfoot, you're the weirdo. And I disagree with that. And a lot of people get mad when I do. But let me explain. I think that there is a North American undiscovered species of ape. I think it was last year. It may have been 2022. In recent years, we had actually found fossils of a brand new North American primate. Not
Oh,
very
wow.
big, but we had never found anything like that before. There was never any proof that any primates have ever lived in North America until that happened. So it's just a testament to the fact that we still have a lot to discover. And the fossil record itself will never be complete. Let's just be honest.
Oh, no. It's so far from complete that
Yeah.
it's kind of absurd, really.
Right. It just it's so, I mean, you don't, not everything that dies turns into a fossil. First of all, it's a very special process, and people don't realize that. You know, they would just assume that fossils are like, oh, everything's got a fossil. It absolutely doesn't.
No. And the soft tissue goes usually very quickly. And we're just, I mean, the most credible professional scientists are putting together a puzzle that's missing 90% of the pieces. You know, it's very difficult to find
Right.
the,
Anything. Yeah. Incredible. Well, I mean,
provable
we still argue about what
evidence.
dinosaurs look like. You know, we really don't
Oh,
know.
yeah. I'm actually working on something with that. And so I've been doing a lot of dinosaur reading lately. And the whole picture that I grew up with, that they were totally reptiles. No, they really weren't. They're mostly birds. But
Right.
huge birds that could do stuff. But
Huge
it's,
birds, yeah,
yeah,
and
it's changed so drastically.
yeah,
And you get such a little amount of evidence. That speaks for the entire, for you'll find a few bones that speak for an entire species. And
yeah,
it's crazy,
and they're good, they are good educated guesses, but that's what they are, they're guesses, and you know, at the end of the day, and I mean, unless we actually see one or clone one or something, you know, we'll never know
What could go
what,
wrong there? I mean,
right, exactly. But you know, with Bigfoot, I think that there's a lot of misconceptions about it. We know, based off of Patty, and Patty, I feel like it's absurd to think that that is anything other than, guess what, a Bigfoot. And you know what we know based off of Patty, if we use her as our standard of a Bigfoot, She's really not as big as everybody thinks she is. She's probably anywhere between 6'7" and 7'4", which of course, standing in front of you is massive. But you get some people that are like, "Oh, it was 12 to 15 feet tall." It wasn't. It can't be. We would have
Yeah.
discovered it, and it wouldn't be able to walk.
I would concur with you on the patty footage. That has always seemed really convincing to me. And especially for the state of the art at that time, which wasn't that great. And just the naturalness of how she seems to move. And as you said, the height is within the realm of human height, that's possible. And
And she might have
everything.
been large. I mean, she might have been large for her species. We don't know. She could have been small for her species. We have no idea. Some species of animals, the female is bigger. Does that normally happen with
Most, yeah.
primates? Not necessarily. They can weigh more sometimes, because they are mammals and they're child rearing, and it's just child rearing is easier when you're fatter, according to nature, apparently. But that could be the case with them. We don't know enough about them to know if their females are bigger, if they're not, if she was an exception, and that's why she was caught, is because she's so much larger than everybody else. Who knows? But that's the only thing we can base it off of. So let's just say she is the standard. Again, 6'7" is not that, it's big, but it's not unbelievably massive.
It's a very large human.
It is. Yep, it
And
is.
that's it. But not even someone suffering gigantism, but like somebody who
Who's
plays a lot of
extra?
basketball,
Yeah.
there are plenty of people that are that height and above,
Yeah. I don't think they're that big. I've got a guy locally who I'm hoping actually I'll get him on one of the brand new shows I'm doing is people sharing their weird experiences. It'll be called Fringes of Reality. And that season will be airing after Beasts and Beyond completes. And I'm hoping to get him to come on and talk about his encounter, him and his wife. He lives locally to me, and he saw a probably 3 to 4 foot tall Bigfoot thing in his
Oh,
yard
wow.
one morning. And what was crazy about it, so he saw it early in the morning. It was just kind of in the tree line there. He kind of backs up onto property, that lives on a tree line. And the next morning, his wife also saw it. So they didn't see this thing together. They both saw separate, saw it separate times, but saw, pretty much the same thing. But the height was interesting because it was small, again, 4 foot tall. And Ohio was really known for a lot of smaller Bigfoot type creatures. And I think that there's probably more of them out there than we realize, as far as like the smaller ones go. It's just that I think that the taller ones get those stories get told more because it's scarier because they're bigger.
Yeah,
But
that makes a lot of sense.
if I had to guess, I don't think they're that large. Like you said, the orang pendek is not very large. I think it's like 6 foot, and it's very scrawny. I don't think these things get that big. And I think that's controversial to a lot of people. But I think that when you're seeing something like that in the woods, even if it's as tall as you are, we are prone to things that are scary or massive. It's like when you see the spider on the wall, right? Oh, this huge spider is the size of my hand. And meanwhile, it's the size of a dime,
Well, crime scene witnesses
Oh, yeah.
often say that the perpetrator is much taller than he really, really is found to be.
And
And
that's
it's.
why there's height charts on gas station doors.
Yes. Well, whatever scares you is bigger, it's larger.
Exactly.
And yeah. I guess, and not so much arguing. I never get mad about the
Sure. Right. There's no
paranormal.
point.
There's
None of us have the right answer. Let's be
no way.
honest.
Exactly. How do you deal with the lack of a body, dead or alive?
You know what? I think people overcomplicate that a lot. Go out in the woods. Tell me how many bodies you see. I've been out in the woods a lot, and every once in a while, you do come across things, maybe birds sometimes, small animals. Found a dead cat once. That was, devastating emotionally to me.
Yeah.
But you don't really, I mean, how many deer carcasses do you come across? It happens. But it doesn't happen very often. How many bears do people come across? I just think that, we can't be everywhere at once. And I think that People forget how big the woods are. You know, they really do. And let me tell you, take a road trip anywhere, go out to the mountains, go somewhere, and just drive, and you see all of that unaltered, untouched wooded area. Nobody's hanging out in those areas. You can't park on the highway and get out and walk out there. You know, there's just so much that we can't have access to. I think these things don't live anywhere that's in any type of proximity to humans, and I think that that's just animal common sense, right? We kill things, they're going to stay away from us. And you know, I don't think it takes any type of superhuman intelligence to come to that conclusion. I just think that they live in deep places that people don't normally get to. And so by the time one dies, and I think that they are also very small populations, and you know, by the time we're able to actually get access to it, it's already been overtaken by nature. You know, not to mention how many times have you come across bones in the woods and you pick it up and take it with you? A lot of people that are interested in these topics don't realize how small this community really is. And you'll have
That
some
that's
people
true.
that are like, you know, they've heard of Bigfoot, right? They know what that is, but they're not crazy about Bigfoot. You know, they're not going on a camping trip with their family to see Bigfoot. They're going to camp. So if they come across a bone, they're not picking it up and going, oh, we got to take this to a lab and get it tested and make sure it's not Bigfoot. Again, I just think the topic of no bodies is just way, we overthink it way too much.
That makes sense. I guess I don't know if I've ever shared this with you, the cryptid experience that I had.
I don't think so.
Okay. Yes, back, and I can actually put a reasonable date on this. It was Mother's Day weekend in 2019. And my wife and I were in Richland County, Wisconsin, which is probably the most rural county in the state, but still isn't like a national forest or anything. I mean, it's mostly farms in the woods kind of environment. And we had it only lasts about 5 seconds. Okay. It wasn't a long drawn out experience, but we both saw something come out of a cornfield and run about 100 yards into a wooded area across a clear patch. It's so hilly in that country that a lot of the farmers will plant crops on the lower part of a hill
Sure.
and leave the top wooded because you can't move tractors and combines and stuff. It's too
Right.
steep. And we both saw a large, hairy creature come out of the cornfield and try to climb. Well, it did. It successfully climbed up the hill and into the wooded area in a p space of a few seconds, but enough time, not peripheral, enough time to look right at it. And we didn't talk about it right away, but when we got to town, I asked her what she saw, and she was 100% that she'd seen Bigfoot. I felt that I had seen a weird mutant bear, but not the kind of bear that really exists in nature, because especially not there, which doesn't have a native bear population. And what lives in Wisconsin are just black bears, which don't get more than like a couple 100 pounds. This was enormous and it was multicolored. And it was not ethereal or, anything. It looked like a very much a flesh and blood creature, scrambling as fast as it could and kind of hopping up this hill because it was so steep. And I have racked my brain for any normal thing that could be. I grew up in the rural environment, as did my wife, and I'm glad she was there so I wasn't completely losing my mind because we both saw it at the same time. And we saw generally the same thing, even if we, there may have been details may have been different or we may have interpreted it differently. But I have not been able to put anything else that would be than, some sort of cryptid creature. And yet
Sure.
it's baffled me how it could live in that environment and not be seen frequently. I don't know.
Well, you've also got these little air. I mean, you know, if you go to a lot of these small towns, where a lot of these creatures have a lot of lore and backstory to them, most of the time, culturally, it's just the fact that they live there. It's not really up for debate. They don't question whether or not it's real. They know that it is, and that's good enough for them. So it's not necessarily that they aren't being seen. It's just that these are people that don't, I don't know if it's some type of bravado thing, like, oh, I'm not going to tell on it because then it's going to get experimented on and, they feel badly about it. Or if it's just simply they don't quite understand how big of a cultural impact it would have to the rest of the world for us to recognize these things as discovered. But the amount of untold stories in those lands are abundant. I mean, it's just, somebody that goes out and talks to them, talks to people, gets submerged in their cultures. It's very clear that, again, these are indisputable facts to them. They don't need to be to prove anything to them because they've grown up with it their whole life, and it's just something that lives amongst them in their area. So that is interesting. And then, of course, you
That's a
don't
good
have a lot of
point.
that in big
And
cities because they don't come to big cities. They stay away from the big cities. So,
as it happens, of course, who did I report it to? Nobody. A
right. There's
couple
no
years later, I talk about
Ghostbusters,
it on a podcast, but exactly. The
right.
last thing I was going to do is go in and go to the Richland County Sheriff's Department and say, "Hi, I'm completely nuts. Would you, like to hear my
Exactly.
story?" So I know I didn't tell anybody officially. So I guess that probably happens quite a lot.
Well, I think it happens a lot. And just with any high strangeness, I think it goes so gravely underreported. And that's why we have misconceptions of things like UFO flaps and stuff like that. It's just because it's always happening all the time. It's just we have a flap because they finally have somebody to report it to, so it seems
Yes.
like it's a concentrated thing that's happening in a period of time. It's not. They just finally have a safe place to share that stuff. They have the Ghostbusters finally.
That's something you've mentioned, and I really thought that was quite an insight that maybe there is no such thing as flaps. Maybe sometimes people are just listening, and the rest of the time it's ignored. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a
The
lot of
situation
sense.
goes viral, so to speak, for those times. And, again, they finally have a resource available to them. So.
And you talk to a number of people, and sometimes it takes getting to know them a little bit. And then it seems like every person has at least one encounter in their life that is really out there. And few people wear that on their sleeve, you know? And there's kind of a psychological tendency not to want to talk about it, that this one thing deviated from everything else in my life. Well, I'm not going to focus on that. I'm going to kind of just move on and do the stuff I always do and not really think about that much.
Oh yeah. I have made my entire life dedicated to these topics, and I find myself in situations where it's still very hard to talk about. Again, everybody that listens to the show, everybody that partakes in these topics, you really, really, really forget that there are maybe, and I mean maybe, tops in the whole entire world. About, I'd say, 50,000 people who really genuinely believe in this stuff and track it and pay attention to it and research it and, take in the media about it. That's a very small number. And, I think that, again, we forget how small this community is. The average Joe is not spending their day thinking about UFOs or Bigfoot or Mothman or ghosts or, and they might have a weird story. They may have a weird encounter. And then, maybe for a split second, they get a blip into it and they go, huh, those lights in the sky, that's what people are talking about. That creature, that's what people are talking about. But again, they don't really have anywhere to report it to. And even though now we have so many resources available, there's so many people, we've got the internet, right? You can find who to report stuff to. Now the problem is that it's oversaturated. There's too many people to report it to.
Yes,
So
yes.
where do you turn to? You just don't. It's easier to just ignore it and act like it didn't happen. And of course, you're not going to talk about it with too many people. Some people might, you might have weird Uncle Frank, who saw that Bigfoot at one time when he was hunting or whatever. But it just, again, this is such a small topic. It can be hard to be vulnerable and come forward and be like, hey, look, this is what I do. Because then that opens up the opportunity for me to be talking to a skeptic. And It's not like I'm intimidated by a skeptic. I'm not. I oftentimes say that I enjoy speaking with them, because if I can't hold my own in an argument with a skeptic, then I'd better quit my job and do something else. I'm not doing a very good job at what I'm doing. But I don't always want to, you know,
Oh yeah, I mean,
don't always want
and
to engage.
I'd kind of draw a line between skeptic, as in people that want evidence and proof, which I think is reasonable, at least most of the time, and people who are absolutely never going to believe anything that's not the consensus reality, no matter what you put up. You know, you have the dead alien on the cart, and it's not that.
It's rubber, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the late Amazing Randi was kind of like that. They have $1 million if you can prove any paranormal phenomena. That was some pretty safe money because he was never going to accept anything anybody ever presented, no matter what you proved. And that's, you know, there's people who are hardcore, just like there's hardcore believers, there's hardcore disbelievers. And who get a real, you know, solace from not believing stuff. And, you know, that they're not going to violate their faith either, you know. And I don't spend a lot of time on that because they're a rock. They're not going to move.
Yeah, for an individual, yeah, absolutely not. I don't anymore, because I mean, they're not paying me to do what they should be doing, their homework.
True.
You know, I don't owe them anything. But it can be hard. You know, I do
Oh,
follow
yeah.
different, you know, of course, different people in cryptozoology and things like that. And like one thing that pops up all the time is how like Mothman isn't real. And that's a tough one for me. That makes me a little, of course, it's personal. But it's hard, and it just tells me that, I mean, eventually it motivates me, but up front, I mean, it's heartbreaking, and it's no wonder that people don't come out and talk about the really weird stuff, because there are so many people that just don't believe, won't believe, refuse to believe. And you know, I've tried to have conversations with these folks and be like, look, I know it's real because I saw it. And at the same time, I get it because when I saw it, didn't believe that's what I saw. You know, but of course they don't know me. You know, they don't know who I was then. They only know who I am now. And you know, of course I've got something to gain from being a Mothman witness.
If you don't
But
mind, Ashers,
sure.
I've heard it, but I could hear it 100 more times. And I don't think a lot of people listening may have heard it. What was your Mothman experience?
So it's pretty simple. So back in, it was probably June or July of 2016. I know it was summer. I was staying the night at a friend's house, and you know, full disclosure, I was staying the night there because we were making weed brownies, and like that was our thing. We were having a little two-person party, and so we made our weed brownies. We ate them. Again, full disclosure, I was no stranger to marijuana at the time. I was a regular user, had never had any issues with it in the past, even in edible form. And so the night winds down, and I'm sleeping on our couch, and I am just kind of laying there. And as I'm laying there, I just start kind of freaking out. I don't really know how to describe paranoid, I guess, fearful. I don't know. I was afraid. And, you know, I just thought I was really high. And so when you are really high, or, you know, just impaired at all, I know one thing that I do personally is, you know, I'll kind of look around the room. I'll kind of pick a spot to like look and focus on. And it's just kind of grounding, right? You just kind of look for a second and you go, okay, I'm just really high. I'll be all right. The spot that I chose was kind of on top of her, like she had this like TV cabinet in like the corner of the room, and there's about 2 feet of space in between the top of the cabinet and the ceiling. So I kind of looked in between that blank space there, and as I'm laying there, something starts forming in that corner of the room, and I don't really know what to make of it. It happened so fast where, you know, it's kind of ridiculous for me to try to attribute thoughts that were going on in my head while this is happening. So this thing is forming. It starts off with a head, rolls down to shoulders. It's kind of black and misty. The shoulders start kind of reaching out like over like top of the ceiling, kind of over top the whole room. And you know, they're turning into what I assume were arms. Well, as these arms were forming, they started drooping downwards. They weren't arms, they were wings. And at that time, that's when I left the room. I got up and left, and I went and I woke her up. She laughed. She's like, "Ha, you're high," you know. But she woke up and she hung out with me for a while. We hung out, and that was it. Now, again, this was 2016. I at that time was very skeptical of anything supernatural. I did not believe in the Mothman, had never believed in the Mothman before this. I was always into cryptozoology, but that's different because there is a known science we can attribute to animals that we just haven't discovered yet. Mothman was always a ridiculous story to me. I do live kind of close to the area and did at the time, but I'd never been to the Mothman Festival or anything like that. So flash forward, I just kind of forget about this whole incident. In 2021, I am taking a Mothman encounters. This was after I'd started doing my research. I started doing Mothman research in September of 2019. And a girl told me a story about how, her and her boyfriend were staying at a hotel in Atlanta, Georgia, and they had seen the Mothman. They had seen it flying around outside their hotel room, and
Wow.
it was also peeking into the window of their third story hotel room. And the one thing that she said to me kind of triggered this memory of my own event. She said, "Well, I want to be honest. We were taking gummies. We were taking THC gummies, and but I'm a regular user, so she sent me pictures of the packaging and everything, because she was so desperate, I think, for me to believe that what she saw was legitimate. She was worried that that would impact her story." And I don't know, something about that moment, I was like, it was so weird. It's like everything kind of came together about my life for the past, 6 years or so. And it hit me, and I went, "Oh shit, I saw that. I saw it. I saw that. I know that's what I saw." And some people question it. How do you know it's not a shadow person? How do you know it's not a spirit? And I can't answer that with a simple answer. My Mothman research has been, I don't like to say divinely guided because I'm not a spiritual person in that sense either, but it has been like fueled to the brim with synchronicities. It's been very weird. And a lot of that, just to be honest with you, I mean, I can't prove to you how I felt in a lot of these moments that I've experienced in doing this research. I can just try to lend my credibility in other areas and hope that people trust what I say to them about it. And that's that really. You
That's
couldn't you
fascinating.
can't convince me I
And
saw anything different.
just to clear it up for any listeners that may not have had these sort of experiences, I'm talking about the THC. I'm not talking about the
Sure.
beings. That's not that kind of hallucination isn't part of taking edibles.
No.
That's not what really happens.
No,
You may
it's
have
not.
many things happen. I once got lost in my kitchen, and I don't. Edibles aren't part of my life at this point,
Not
but
for me either. So that's
yeah,
what I tell everybody. The last time I took edibles, I saw the Mothman. No, thank you.
exactly. Yes, but you don't see things that
No,
are not there. You
you don't.
know, as a this is not LSD or DMT or something. Very, very different and much milder
Right.
experience. You know,
Yeah.
so
Yeah.
what
Well, and
you're
that's what.
seeing is really there in some capacity. You know.
Right. Now the paranoia and the freaking out, I mean, that could have been attributed to
Oh,
the
yeah.
marijuana use, or it could have been the experience. Some of the Mothman stories that are out there, have this weird sense of dread to them. And I don't know if it's just because, I don't know if it's something that it does on purpose. Some of the stories are like that. Frank Shaw, the Frank Shaw gargoyle story, which for anybody that doesn't know, Frank Shaw was an employee of NASA who walked out of the NASA building in Houston and saw a gargoyle sitting on the building. One thing that he claims it seemed like it was doing, he was very afraid. But again, you're seeing a gargoyle. Is that natural fear? Who knows?
Yeah.
But he said that he felt like this thing was enjoying the fact that he was very afraid. And a lot of the time, these feelings that you have surrounding these experiences, I mean, again, it's not proof. And it's not something that you can easily explain. It's just something that, well, it happens. And you either get it or you don't. Which it's crazy because all of us Mothman witnesses, and I've talked to a lot now, we have this weird bond with each other. I mean, it's very strong, and it's just Mothman encounters are very personal experiences, and it goes on to affect your entire life. And I don't mean like just your disposition and your beliefs and it rattles you there. I just mean like within 4 months of me seeing this creature, I landed a marketing job at Victoria's Secret of all places, somewhere that I had fucking had no business being. I wasn't qualified to do anything like that. But I applied for the job and I got it. I mean, my whole entire life changed in strange ways. Shortly after that, I had been very single for many years, like 7 years or something like that. I fell in love, and I fell in love fucking hard. Just strange occurrences. Your whole life shakes up, and any Mothman witness out there, they know exactly what I'm talking about. They've been through it. So
That's
anyway,
a
again, it's
fascinating aspect because I'm thinking that all the way back to when John Keel was looking for this thing, his life went in all different directions suddenly. And he talked about the fields of fear, where you'd be walking along and suddenly, wham, you're really scared. And nothing's really changed, but almost like some kind of wave or something was making you feel afraid. And then the drastic changes that happen in people's lives that seem somehow connected, though nobody can really explain how or why. But something is happening. It's, that is fascinating. That is.
It really is. And that's the aspect of the Mothman stories that you don't hear. You don't hear the follow-up. You just hear somebody saw the Mothman this one time. And people don't really understand what that implies. It's not just seeing a Bigfoot. It is a whole experience, and it continues to affect you many years. Linda Scarberry, one of the original Mothman's
Yes.
witnesses. She went on to have a very interesting life and continued to speak about this thing. She was very afraid of it when it initially happened. And over the years, she had kind of changed that fear. While she admits that she was very afraid of it initially, she later said that she felt like it was lonely,
Wow.
which was an interesting perspective.
Yes,
But
indeed.
she saw it again later in life. This wasn't a one-time experience. And so it has definitely piqued my interest in tracking, not just, of course, not just my own experiences, but other people's experiences, and if they see it again. And I do feel like I'm going to, and maybe that's just me being hopeful. But I don't know. I feel like this is so significant in my life, which
Almost like a
again is.
harbinger, yeah. Like
You know, it's
it's.
well, it's one of those strange feelings of it's just overwhelming. Like it's like your intuition, your gut instinct, and it's like I've got this friend. She's convinced she's going to win the lottery. Okay, she keeps a dollar bill in her purse at all times, in case she gets the day that she's going to take that dollar bill and win it. Win the lottery. She knows she's going to. It's going to happen for her. Has it happened yet? No, she hasn't felt the overwhelming need to purchase a ticket yet. We all have that gut instinct. And again, it's just a feeling that you can't possibly describe. It's like describing a dream to another person. They don't get it unless they're there. And I feel like that's how I feel about the Mothman. I feel like it's gonna happen again. It's just meant to be. We're gonna come across each other one of these days, and I won't be so
Wow,
afraid or
that
high,
is really
hopefully.
interesting. Yes. No, but that is really interesting. And I guess we'll see what the future holds, but it's more than just, an encounter. It's something that really has a deeper meaning in some way, whatever that may be. It's something more than just, I think I saw this thing that, I don't know what it is, but that is really interesting, Ashers. Wow.
Well, thank you.
No, that's a fascinating story. And I won't even guess what it means because I don't know what it means, but it means something.
I don't either. Right. So we're in the same boat, and that's kind of what I'm trying to figure out. Do I want the truth about all this stuff? Yeah, I do. But do I want to know why I was, I don't want to say picked. That sounds like I'm special. I'm not. I'm just a person, you guys. But to say that again, that this wasn't life altering to me, I mean, it shook up everything that I thought I knew about anything ever. And I want to know why. I want to know why me now? Why am I being, why did these things happen to me? And how can I translate that to other people to make them open their eyes and see that we're not just crazy people having experiences. These are real. How can I induce that in other people so that they get it? Because again, I just experiences like this, I just don't think you get until you have one.
I think there's probably a lot of truth to that. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Wow.
So we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm here
Yes.
for it. So.
Yes, we shall. I know we've been working on this a while, and it's a project that's probably going to take, it'll take what it takes. But how is the movie going?
It has been not going well.
Okay.
And just because I honestly, I mean, I've stepped away from it for a minute. When I jumped into documentary filmmaking, I didn't think, and I've never done anything like this before. I thought that it would be a lot easier than it has been, and the concept of it has changed a couple of times. Well, not really. So I mean, it's about the Mothman, and it is about conveying my experience with it as well as showcasing other people's experiences. It's also about moving away from the flap in Point Pleasant, and showing people that this is a phenomena that's been around as long as we have, and continues to persist to this day, in the same capacity that it did then. But I learned that making movies is expensive. And, there have been circumstances, I guess, in modern day. I guess I'll talk about it. There's allegedly a flap of Mothman sightings that have been happening in Chicago.
Yes.
And I'm skeptical of those sightings. And as much as, of course, I want everybody to believe in the power and love of Mothman, as my cult leader self sounds sometimes, I have to be honest about some of this stuff. And I've been trying to get to the bottom of that. Well, it's hard to investigate something when you're 6 hours away. And I just have simply to put I have not had the money nor the time to be able to put into going and giving this a proper effort. And when you're making a documentary that's about an ongoing investigation, it's really important that you investigate.
Yes.
And sometimes investigations are nothing happens. Now, what I've learned not to announce things before they're ready in this field, because then people expect them from you right away. And when you look at other projects centered around these topics, especially in an ongoing investigation, what you'll find is that these things took many, many years to come out with. I think like John Keel didn't put out Mothman Prophecies until I think 1975.
Yes, that sounds about right. And it
Almost
happened
a decade.
long time earlier, yes.
Because again, it is an ongoing study. I've had some people say, well, you just end it somewhere. And you're right, but I can't do that. I can't do that with these sightings being so prevalent in the community and me just going, well, I can't tell you about them because everybody wanted me to just end it and put it out.
And no, that's an important point because that's kind of what Keel did with the bridge collapse. And a lot of
It
people
is.
think that it was very limited to that small town, and then the bridge collapse happened and game over. But it wasn't.
It wasn't.
And you've really kept that alive, that this is an ongoing phenomena that does continue to occur. And that I will give Keel, I have all the respect in the world for him, but he was kind of going through, he was kind of losing his mind, and he needed it to end. And I think that's kind of why he ended it there.
We see that a lot happen in this field, unfortunately.
Is an occupational hazard.
But it's like, the need to give answers. I don't necessarily feel like I need to give answers. I have made up my mind. Once I feel satisfied with the Chicago investigation, I can put a well, I'm not even I can put a cap on it, so to speak, that is willing and ready to be opened at any time. It won't end Mothman research for me. But what this has done, I mean, since it has taken so long, I said that the concepts has kind of changed a little bit. No, it hasn't really changed, but if I would have just done it and put it out when I originally had intended to, which is back in 2020, my intention was to put it out that year, that fall. There's so many people I wouldn't have met. There's so many avenues I wouldn't have investigated. My perspective has changed since then. And when I put this out there, I want it to be something that stands the test of time. I don't want to be like, oh, I'm going to put my name on this, and this is what I believe, and this is what I feel. And then in 5 years, that completely changes, and then I got
Oh
to do it
yes. Mm-hmm.
again.
But it'll take what
But
it takes. But I think
exactly.
when you're completed, it will be a real, profound statement about the phenomenon.
Yeah, it will be really good. Now that was why I decided, hey, let's write a book and put the book out. I can put the book out. All my Mothman research up until this point. I think that would be really fascinating. And I had intended on doing that, but then I had to find a new co-host for my show. Then that turned into three brand new shows. And sometimes it just works that way. Unfortunately, people don't pay you to investigate,
No.
people
The
will pay me for the
costs of
book.
doing stuff is, yeah.
It's outrageous, but I can't, I have to look. I mean, as much as the truth is important, if I want to keep doing this as my job, I have to prioritize what makes money. And I know that sounds bad to people. I get it. It sounds dishonest,
That is
but
100% the real world, though,
it is right. I can't pay my bills with Mothman research, it doesn't work that way. So it's just priority. And again, I'm one person. I don't have a team like Seth Breedlove does with Small Town Monsters. I have just me, and I've never, ever, ever filmed or edited or script written, or I've never done any of that in my entire life. And I plan on keeping it that way. I mean, unless there's somebody that wants to put out some free labor, I've already sunk probably about $12,000 of my own money into this thing, and I probably will never make that back. So it's certainly a passion project, but it's going to take time to put out there, but I promise that when it does, it's going to be worth the wait. It's not just going to be, YouTube quality, here's something. It's going to be good. I'm going to make sure it's good, and that's why it's important to take the time with it.
Absolutely. It's a labor of love, and will produce a really, I can't wait for it to come out, but I will wait. Obviously, we will all wait. And when you're done, I'm sure it will be something really amazing.
Oh yeah, and everybody will know. I will be everywhere pushing it to everyone because again, I have to at least make $12,000 back on it. So, and the whole world will know when it's ready.
That will be something to look forward to. Absolutely.
For sure.
I'm just gonna shift gears a little bit because we've been just flowing along here, and I'm actually we're good on time, but it has been moving along. You sometimes talk about true crime. What are some of the cases that you find fascinating?
Oh, that's a big question. Most of the time, it just depends on what's happening right now. But I do have a couple favorites. One that I just dived into is a local case about a girl named Erica Baker, who in my city, Kettering, back in the 90s, I think it was 99, I can't remember, went missing. Okay. She was walking her dog. She was 9 years old and she went missing. And the area she went missing in is a very highly populated area. It's where the local middle school is, as well as an elementary school and the rec center. And what's fascinating about this case to me is that we know what happened to Erica Baker. We know who killed. We know she's dead. We know who killed her. We don't know where her body is.
Wow.
So a gentleman by the name of Christian Gabriel was getting really high with his girlfriend and potentially two other friends. And they were driving around that area and they hit and killed her.
Oh, man.
They loaded her body up in the van. They didn't really check to see if she was dead, or at least that's what Christian says. And they went back to his apartment, I'm sorry, his trailer, and got high again. They smoked a bunch of crack, trying to figure
Oh,
out what to do
man.
with her body. Now Christian says that he wasn't from the area. He had just moved to the area with his girlfriend Jan, and Jan said, "I know a great place to dump the body. It's called Huffman Dam. Let's go out there." So they do. Christian allegedly stays in the van while the other three take the body somewhere in that general direction and come back without her. But we've never found her. And because we've never found her, and because all we really have is his testimony, nobody's ever been charged with a murder.
Wow.
And it's very
That is
fascinating.
amazing.
It's a
So
very fascinating story.
are they incarcerated on other charges?
So Christian Gabriel was, which is crazy because he ended up getting like abusive corpse. I think he got other things also. I can't remember, but like small charges. He served some time in prison. He got out. When he got out, Erica's grandmother gave him a ride home from the prison. And the family tried to like be nice to him and supportive in hopes that he would tell where her body is. And he just
Wow.
says, "So I'm sorry, I don't remember. I was high. I don't remember." And
And he wasn't gummy as high. He was like hardcore
right. Like I said, they went and
crack
smoked crack. He
cocaine,
admits
maybe some
that while they had the
meth.
body. Yeah.
Okay.
So but I think it's a fascinating case. We still talk about it locally. The anniversary just passed here. Searches are still happening. They're still
Wow.
very much trying to find her body, and it has been now, I think it was 99, because I think it was just the 25th anniversary. And we don't know. We have no idea. Now, he gave police directions from where they went to, and the directions that they went to, there is a Huffman Dam here. The directions he gave them don't lead to Huffman Dam. They lead to a different park. And so it is possible that he just didn't know the name, or they didn't know the name, or we have a lot of like national, reserves and everything in the area. So many places that could be searched, and you're talking about a body. It's just going to be bones, at
Oh
this point.
yeah. It's just amazing that it hasn't been found in two and a
And
half
this long,
decades.
and this
Wow.
long, and there's, and the, they're still hoping that they'll find her. I don't know. I like, it's weird to say I like missing persons cases, but
Oh no, that's one of my focuses of interest too. Especially when they're not sure that they're dead. And especially when they come back alive.
Well, and we talked about the Johnny Gosch case over
Yes.
on the show, and that's one of those ones where Johnny Gosch was missing as a teenager. I don't want to say abducted because we don't really know for sure. And allegedly, as an adult, came back and re and visited his mother and said that he's alive, he is fine. He's not fine. But another guy came forward who claimed to be a part of this, which is he's probably about Johnny's age, a little bit older. Ended up coming forward later on saying that he was also abducted into this like pedo ring, this like child prostitution ring, and that Johnny Gosch was is one of the victims of the ring. And he helped abduct him,
Wow.
but as far as like coming out to media and things like that, there, Johnny never has. He's never been like, "Yeah, I'm here." He visited his mom that one time. She still very much online believes that he is alive, that he's being held captive, in a way, but can't come forward about it. It's crazy. It's a crazy
It
story.
is. It is really wild. Is the other guy, was he the one that was a male prostitute in Washington, D.C.?
I think so. I believe
Okay,
so. Yeah, for
this
like
was in
the rich
the
people.
Bush era, yeah. The George W. Bush era. And yes, he was not, hanging around on the corner. He was a high-end male prostitute. And it was just a bizarre story that was swept under the rug as much as humanly possible. Disappear and do not surface publicly ever again type of thing. You could
And well,
really,
and
I remember that.
that's his perspective of it, is that he was, I mean, he's in prison, I believe, for something else, but he says, of course, he's framed, that this is an attempt to shut him up. There's been no proof to prove what he's saying, except for circumstantial and anecdotal evidence. Nothing solid though. But isn't that really what a cover up is, right? To
Yes.
hide all the evidence, so who knows? He could
And
be
he
telling
was
the
in the
truth.
circles where people could really do that.
Yeah. So, I
It
mean,
is bizarre. Yeah.
I don't know how the Epstein stuff has affected his credibility, because he came out with this way before that happened, way
Oh,
before
yeah.
that happened. So I don't know if they've kind of revisited his story or anything like that. But it is fascinating. So yeah, we cover that. A lot of the true crime topics that we cover tend to have something extra strange about them.
Yes, yes.
We did the Charles Manson story, but with the take of, was he a victim of MK Ultra? And that's what this was all about, which has a little more credibility to it than you might think.
Oh, yeah, that
He knew the
please,
people.
if you want to digress a little bit, that sounds fascinating.
I don't remember the details exactly. It's been a long time since we covered it, but he did end up having like dealings with certain people that were directly involved with MK Ultra in some way. Now, granted, Charles Manson knew a lot of people. I mean,
Yes,
he was a
he got
popular guy.
around for a guy that, has a background of just basically being in prison for
Right.
most of his life,
For being a
which is the
homeless
worst.
career criminal. No, he did. He knew a lot of people, and but he did have some dealings with specific individuals within MK Ultra. And MK Ultra at the time was, of course, experimenting with, well, a lot of drugs, and so wasn't Charles Manson. So,
Oh, yes.
there could
There's.
be some type of tie there,
I'm thinking of. Great, now I'm totally blanking on his name. Kind of a controversial figure, Peter LaVenda, that's who I'm thinking of. And he had a similar hypothesis that the government had dealt with Manson, and that his family in the Spawn Ranch was a great place to test control tactics,
Right.
dosing people with a lot of LSD and keeping them up for long periods of time and having sex in a way that was disruptive to them psychologically. And what does that do to people? And that seemed to be a perfect laboratory to find some stuff like that out.
Right. Who's going to believe the hippie commune? You know what I mean?
Absolutely nobody. Yes.
They were the prime example. And it's not saying that Manson didn't, have these people kill people.
Oh yeah, I totally think they did, but that may be a part of the bigger picture.
Right. He was given the proper resources to build a cult-like mentality because he himself was an experiment. Him and the whole group was an experiment that he just wasn't really aware of. Now he later in life, of course, tried to say that he was completely innocent. He had nothing to do with any of these murders. His trial was actually very unfair, if I'm honest with you. It really was. He really was due. And I'm not trying to be a Manson apologist or
Oh
anything.
no, I would concur that from just what I've read and everything, there was no possibility of him not being found guilty.
Right. Well, he
Even
wasn't
though,
allowed to testify at his own trial, and that is unjust, frankly. I
yes,
mean,
it was, if I may, in my opinion, it was a show trial that was designed to take this, almost the archetype of the evil hippie and make sure that he is to pay for the crimes of society.
Oh yeah, they absolutely made an example out of him. And that is clear. Now again, does that mean that I'm saying he's innocent? No, absolutely not. But
No, same here. And no, he's guilty as hell, but in a more complicated way than what was suggested. I don't think he was necessarily physically there at all, but that doesn't clear you. Like the mob boss, doesn't standing over the body, but he gave the order type of thing.
So I mean, there's that. We also did the episode that ended up being a little controversial, about it was questioning OJ's innocence or guilt.
Oh man,
OJ Simpson.
can I interrupt for 1 second, Asher? Just on the topic of MK Ultra, the person who I've also thought was a product of those experimentations was Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, who, yes, he went to Harvard when he was still in his teens, kind of a young Sheldon type of character. He's really smart, but while he was at Harvard, he volunteered for LSD testing. And that was done, by the government. Was it, I don't know whether it was administratively under MK Ultra or not, but it was a very similar type of program. And They tested large amounts of LSD on him. And I think that that changed his personality into what he later became and
Interesting.
lit the fuse on him picking these weirdly specific targets and these intricately crafted bombs and sending the letters and all the crazy stuff that he went to. I think that that was, he was in his own way a victim of some real tampering with his mind. And this was done at Harvard, you know, and it happened.
I know there's so much. MK Ultra is one of those things that is absolute fact,
Oh,
and
yes.
the unfortunate part about it is that we don't know how deep that goes.
Oh, no, we've only got what was
Because
in the boxes they didn't burn.
right, exactly. Now there's a lot of speculation about what that could be, and of course it ranges to they've discovered all these crazy psychic powers and things like that. Is that true? I don't know. I wasn't there. I hope
Yes.
not anyway.
Well,
I don't think I was there. But
age
they're
regression is working really well, so we've got that.
right. I know it's doing a good job. But there are things about it that are and just beautiful fact, and people just kind of overlook that a lot, and I think that's real unfortunate, but I guess that was the plan. So
The amnesia of the American public and press is always amazing.
yeah,
But you,
so
please, I interrupted you. Go ahead with OJ. I'd like to hear that.
oh, that's right, yeah. So yeah, the earliest true crime episodes we did was about OJ Simpson, and about whether or not he killed Nicole. And of course, I know everybody is rolling their eyes. Of course, OJ did it. But there's actually been proof out there, contrary, to the contrary, that he did not, in fact, kill her. There was a lot of evidence not stacked against him. I mean, the only thing he really had was that him and Nicole had a very volatile relationship, and that's it. I mean, she did call the cops on him one time for domestic violence. It was cited that they were both violent towards each other, and they probably were. Let's be honest. But when you look
There
at
are
the
many
facts,
dysfunctional relationships in this country that don't end in murder, you know?
right, exactly. It happens, unfortunately. But when you look at the facts of the case, and of course, well, then why did he run? What was the Bronco chase about? Well, there's a pretty good chance that it was actually OJ's son that killed Nicole and Ron Goldman. And a lot of people don't really know that because they've already made up their mind that he's guilty. And but there's so much about it where when you look at it, I mean, all of the evidence points to this individual. And the reason why OJ was trying to flee the country with a lot of money was not for his protection, but for his son's protection, his adult son's protection. The reason why he acted so weird is because his son maybe admitted to him that he did it. And you're going to do everything that you can to protect your child. And again, this isn't definitive. I'm not saying I think for sure OJ didn't do it. But I wanted to add a different perspective to a story that's already going down in history, tale as old as
Oh,
time,
yes.
and present maybe a different case and speculate on that possibility. And a lot of people have listened to that episode, and at first, they're mad, right? Of course, OJ did it. But then once they get through it, they're like, you know what? I didn't know any of that.
That is a
And I'm like,
really interesting theory, and it's a kind of counterfactual that I can see that that would explain his behavior, because the car chase and the rambling interview he gives with the while he's on the car chase, he's not driving. I think Al Cowling is driving, and there's a like police hostage negotiator who's talking with him because he's afraid OJ is going to kill himself. And he's trying to talk him down. And he gives this long, rambling conversation, which is, it's all recorded. And he never really says that he did it, but he seems guilty and conflicted. But not, your theory makes, would fit those same bases. You know what I mean? It would, that would put you in a hell of a fix. You know, your son has killed,
Your
Your
ex-wife.
ex-wife was not his
Yep.
mother.
Yep.
It's that would be, well, I don't know how anybody would handle it. I don't
Right.
know what anybody would do, you know? It
Yeah,
that's a
it's
situation you don't prepare for, you know?
well, and like I said, I mean, there's a mountain of evidence that supports it. It's really wild. A lot of people use the argument, well, then why did he write that book? You know, if I did it, and I read that book, of course.
Oh, wow. I'd never known anybody who'd read. Go ahead.
Yeah, I sure have read it. And it's an all right read. OJ didn't write that book. That's the facts of it. He didn't, and there's no proof that he did. This could have very easily been the guy who ghost wrote it. Could have been. It could be a complete work of fiction,
Yes.
and we don't know.
And I
So
mean,
it.
money is why he wrote it, I would assume, you know, or why he put his name on
Well,
it, you know.
he doesn't make any royalties from it. Actually, the Goldman family sued for the rights to it. They published it,
Oh, wow.
and put it out, right? So, but still, there's no proof that OJ had anything at all to do with it. If you actually look into the facts of it, and so he may not have written that book. When you look at the alibis, OJ only had a very finite amount of time where he was compared to where he had to be to go and kill these two people. And it just is it possible? Yes, but is it probable? No, it's not.
Wow.
And his son, on the other hand, was supposed to have been working that night. He was a chef, was supposed to have been working that night and did not have an alibi. There's just so much about it. The son has had violent outbursts in the past, had been fired from jobs for violent outbursts, had a weird obsession with Nicole. There is so much about it that points to it's a potential that he may have done it. And I am purposefully not going to say his name because I don't want to get sued. So,
No, I don't blame. Hey, don't say it by any means. But no, that's
but
really interesting. And
it is, but there is evidence for it if anybody's interested to dive down that rabbit hole. It's a fascinating type of case. So yeah, like I said, when we cover true crime, it's not just true crime for the sake of true crime. Usually there's some type of interesting twist to these stories, or they are just so fucking depraved, like we did Robert Berdella, who was a serial killer, who would keep his victims for weeks at a time
oh man.
and torture them, and kept a log, like a dedicated log book to what he was doing to each one. And the torture is just out of this world, and nobody's ever heard of this guy. He was a serial killer, but nobody cared because he was gay and he was killing other gay men, and nobody cared about gay men, so it's a fascinating case, and I thought that it was important to share and put in
Is
the
this a
gory
while back
details.
in history, or, well, I
No,
guess,
I
is
think
this pre or after Dahmer?
probably around this roughly around the same time. I think a little bit
Okay.
before. It might have been the 80s.
Okay. Yeah, a
Robert.
lot of stuff was just not in the mainstream, even though these are real people, you know, being killed, and it just did not register with law enforcement, with the media, with anybody outside of their family, and sometimes not even then.
Yeah,
Yeah.
right. Yeah. And I mean, again, this guy was holding people hostage in his house, and I mean, he would like hook up electrodes to their eyeballs and
Oh,
explode them out of
man.
their head, and they'd live after that. I mean,
My
crazy. He
God,
was doing
wow.
crazy stuff, and nobody knows about it. It's just nobody. I mean, there's some people, sure, but I mean, he's not a Dahmer. He's not a Bundy. He's Berdella. So, it's just like I said, fascinating. And then, of course, the most recent true crime dive in we did was H.H. Holmes.
Oh,
That murder
yes.
castle that didn't actually exist. That was a fun one too. So
Yes, often these things take on a life of their own as a story, and often that story doesn't have really the roots to actually exist. Yes. Wow, that's some
So, but I
fascinating
think it
material.
fits. It kind of seems weird to maybe talk about true crime on a podcast that's about cryptids and UFOs and paranormal. I don't think so. I don't think
Oh
so at
no, not
all.
at all. It covers kind of a, well, I think I'm doing kind of what you've been doing. A kind of as much a possible 360 of the unknown that includes things that physically did happen, things that may have happened, you know, whatever's the unsolved, the unknown, you know, what would it be on In Search Of 30 years ago? That's a good rule of thumb there,
Or unsolved mysteries.
Yes,
Yeah.
exactly. They cover, I love that stuff where you go across multiple genres and cover things that are very different, but are still unexplained or unknown or unsolved. I love that stuff.
Or just interesting. I mean, that's
Yes.
the thing about it is that, for me, from my point of view, when I do a weekly show, I have to keep it fresh. I have to keep it interesting. And that's what I was saying with like my new co-host. You can tell when people are passionate about what they're doing, and you can
Yes.
tell when they're not. And if I didn't mix it up, you would tell that I'm not passionate about it anymore. not that on a daily basis I am. It's just you get burned out.
Oh,
And
yeah.
the listeners too, I think, there are so many, the podcasting community is oversaturated with content. And
Unfortunately, yeah, that's totally true.
right. And I get bored just listening to just a true crime podcast. It gets depressing, but it doesn't mean I
Oh,
don't
yeah.
learn about it anymore. It just means I don't want to learn about it every single week. And so I, as a listener of things, I can relate to maybe how some people feel about it. We've never had any complaints so far about the variety of content, so that's good.
Oh no, you cover a lot of different bases.
Yeah, we try to. So
There's so much out there where you get into things that, historical things that didn't really happen the way people think they did,
right.
any number of things. There's so much material. We can never hope to, tap most of it.
Well, and that's why we covered like the Battle of Los Angeles was the most recent
Yes.
episode.
That was, I did get a chance to listen to that. It was very good.
And yeah, and I mean, it's just like we said in the episode, the ufological community took it and ran with it and made it something that maybe it wasn't, maybe it was. We don't know in and of itself, and it is a mystery, and we'll never know what the US Army was shooting at that night, So
Yes. And there's a lot of things. So yeah, ultimately you come to the end of the road and you've just, we'll never know. It
right.
could be this, could be that, could be this other thing, could be something we've never thought of, but we're never going to know. We're not going to be able to hold it and look at it and say, this is it. It doesn't often work out that way.
And that's what I try to remind the listeners. You come in, you listen to my show. Of course, I'm going to give you my opinion. But it's just that. Like I said about the dinosaur people earlier, right? It's an educated guess, but it's just a
Yes,
guess.
yes.
And you're free to believe whatever you want. And if you have an opposing view, I always invite people that listen, talk to me about the topic. My inbox is open. I'm very easy to find. I have red hair, I'm a good target.
I don't worry too much that you're going to be confused for somebody else.
Right.
Okay.
It's you can find me on all the social media. I got red hair and I talk about weird stuff. I invite people to come and have that discussion with me. I love to hear it. I love to talk about those things. If anybody ever listens to one of my shows and they go, "No, I think she's wrong." You know what? I could be wrong. I only have a week to research these topics. I could have missed something. And that's valid, and I will be the first one to stand on my own show and go, "Hey, I was wrong about this." We've done it before. We've revisited topics, and with the brand new co-hosts, I intend on revisiting topics with them because they're going to have a different perspective than me and Pat O had, and maybe my mind was changed a little bit on some things. It happens. I think
And
that that's important to be able to, say you were wrong.
that is a very good perspective to have, and when I try to cultivate myself, that my validity as a human being does not depend on me being right about everything, and especially about stuff that's speculative to start with,
Yeah.
based in part on theory and conjecture. I'm speculating. I don't know the truth of the capital T, and I can get stuff wrong, and I can just get a fact wrong or a name or date wrong, and life will go on. It's not that crucial. I take it very seriously, but I try to cultivate that same attitude that I can admit being wrong any number of times,
Right. Yeah, I mean, and I know that like one thing I've been doing on my over on Patreon is releasing these old episodes from the podcast, and those episodes are from 4 years ago. Things are different now. I've changed, and I know that going back and kind of just I don't listen to all of them in their entirety, but I'll kind of skim through them a little bit, and man, things are different. So that's been kind of fun to revisit my own opinions and see how much they've morphed just in 4 years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because they'll be different in another form, I'm sure of it, you know. There are some things that I mean, I'm going to be harder to bend on certain topics, but you know, there are many, many more that I am more than happy. I love to learn, and that's another reason why I do this. So if I see a learning opportunity, I'm going to cling on to it and take it. I'm never going to be too proud to, you know, admit when that has happened. I'm usually excited to share it with other people, actually. So
Absolutely. And I'm fond of saying that I disagree with everybody on something. I disagree with
right.
myself from 5 years ago on a number of things.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. That if you think exactly the way you did 10 years ago, it shows you've learned nothing in 10 years.
Right. Yeah.
That's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah, I mean, nothing has you know, we still don't have answers to things. I put out a social media post recently about ghosts, and I do it sometimes quite a bit. I talk about ghosts, and I share the opinion that ghosts aren't dead people, and it gets people riled up.
Oh, I bet it does.
Oh yeah. Well, they automatically assume that I'm saying ghosts aren't real, and that's not what I said, not what I'm saying. Just that I don't feel like they're dead people. And one of the biggest reasons, I have a multitude of reasons why I think this. One of the biggest reasons that I think this is that we've been theorizing that they're dead people since we've had ghosts, which have been since we've been around.
Oh, yes.
And
Before we could write, before anything, yes.
older than anything, older than cryptozoology, older than ufology, the hauntings of the paranormal is the oldest anomalous phenomena that we have. And we've made zero progress in it. We have found nothing. So my idea is that, you know, you can't just keep doing the same thing and expect res new results. It doesn't work that way. Let's start thinking outside the box. And maybe with some of that outside of the box thinking, we can finally progress some of the science a little bit and find something valid and valuable, you know, in that. And maybe even those new mindsets lead to, oh, they were dead people all along. I don't know, you know, I haven't died. To know.
Well, I kind of look at it like this. I don't like the rationalist, materialist, reductionist idea that your body dies and that's it, game over, nothing more. But I can accept it. If that's the truth, okay. Well, I won't know any better anyway. I can accept some kind of hereafter, some afterlife. I tend to really believe in reincarnation. That is my go-to. But I can't accept where you die and 100 years later you're still clanking chains in this old room where you lived. I can't buy that one.
Yeah, that sounds horrible.
Yes, if the next 100 years I'm gonna do the same crap I was doing all day.
Right.
No,
Still
that doesn't
here?
ring
Yeah.
true for me at all.
You know, well, and I think a lot of people obviously find comfort. Death's an uncomfortable topic. You know, I
Oh,
think that
yeah.
they find comfort in the fact that there's something that continues. And, you know, I'll admit that. I think that the more horrifying idea is that we die and nothing happens.
Yeah,
You know,
we
so
drag.
you know, you're right, and I think a lot of us think that, but like some people are like, well, they're here because they have unfinished business or blah blah blah. You know, so I didn't die, but I almost died. Let me tell you, somebody that almost died, most people, unless they take their own life, most people are not ready to die. They don't
No.
want to. That we spend our whole lives with the one goal, don't die. So you know, I just feel like if ghosts were automatically dead people, it would be crazy to think that they're people with unfinished business. There would be so many of them.
Everybody has unfinished business,
Everybody. Yeah. I mean, you know, I know. That was like one of the things when I almost died, I was like, oh my God, there's all this stuff. You think about that. There's all this little stuff that I didn't get to do, little stuff. And it becomes huge and significant when you face your own mortality.
Do
And
you mind elaborating a little bit on that, or
sure, we can talk about
I
it.
mean,
Yeah.
I don't want to, pressure you, but if you
No, not at
how
all.
did you
No.
have a near-death experience or?
So I sort of so I back in 2021, I think it was, I had a weird week. I couldn't breathe. It was strange. My stomach felt full. And I couldn't breathe. I mean, anything that I did, I was huffing and puffing, and that wasn't like me for somebody who was active and relatively healthy. But I do have really extreme anxiety. So honestly, I thought that maybe, like I said, I had this weird stomach fullness. I just thought, well, maybe I've got a stomach bug. Maybe it's constipation. I didn't know. And maybe my anxiety is playing that up, right? It's making me think that it's worse than it is. This, I think, started on like a Monday. And by Wednesday, when it wasn't really working out, I called my mom. I said, you know, I think I should go to the hospital and make sure I'm all right. And she was like, well, you can't do that because I have to work. I have a young child, so somebody has to take care of her. That would have been my mom. She's like, well, I have to work, so you can't do that. You're gonna have to wait till this weekend. And I'm like, okay. So I waited until the weekend, and I went to the hospital. Come to find out that I was in diabetic ketoacidosis,
Oh
DKA.
my.
Actually,
I happen to know that
euglycemic.
that can be lethal, yes.
Yes, euglycemic diabetic ketoacidosis, which means that usually when you're in DKA, it's because your blood sugar has toppled. It's went way over, and you basically your blood turns thick, syrupy, and your organs can't function normally. It also and then your body starts producing this type of acid. Your blood becomes acidic in a
Wow.
very dangerous way. And so what? But I had normal blood sugar, so. I, of course, I've been testing my blood sugars. I was a type 2 diabetic at the time, or at least I thought. And they were normal. And so I went to the hospital. Well, come to find out, I had never been a type 2. I was a type 1 this whole time and just misdiagnosed.
Oh, wow. That is a huge
Yeah,
medical
huge
error there.
oversight.
Yes.
Huge oversight. And you know, when they diagnosed me, because it was such a weird age and just my with my body and everything else, they were like, you know, when I first went in and said, you know what, I think I'm a diabetic. Because I started losing like functioning in my feet. Turns out I have neuropathy. You know, they were like, we don't think you're diabetic, but we'll test you. Turns out I was, and they thought it was weird I was type 2. It's because I never was. I was type 1. I was just a
Wow.
late onset type 1 diabetic. And you can get type 1 diabetes at any age, is what I learned. So
And I would
I
have
go to the
thought up until
hospital.
this minute that you were either born with it or you were not. Wow.
Nope. It is anytime. Some people are like in their 50s when they're diagnosed. It just depends on when your pancreas really stops producing what it needs to. You know, it can just stop at any time. Whereas like type 2 diabetes is you're still producing insulin and the hormones and things. Your body just doesn't know how to use it. Type 1 is where your pancreas stops producing it at all and will not re reproduce it again. So it loses functioning anyway. So I'm at the hospital and you know, I'm talking to them just like I talk to anybody, except I'm huffing and puffing in between breaths to try to talk.
Wow.
And they're just shocked. They can't believe that I walked in there, that I'm conscious. You know, I'm in a really bad way. And I'm just my happy-go-lucky self. And then I spent a week in the hospital. I mean, in that doesn't normally happen. You know, I was put in the ICU for the first, I think it was the first 24 hours, and I was moved into regular care. Usually you're out in like 3 days. But I mean, I was really bad off. And it didn't hit me until after I'd left the hospital, after about a month where things kind of calmed down. And you know what? I wasn't going to go. I wasn't going to go. I was going to listen to my mom. She was like, you're just having panic attacks. You're fine. And had I not went, I would have died.
Oh yes, that
And
ketoacidosis. I mean, yes, I know people who've died of that. Yeah, it's
oh
very
yeah.
serious.
And you know, so I didn't quite die, but it definitely it messed with me. And you know, I had my own personal experiences in the hospital. I had experienced some delirium in the hospital. I was convinced that the doctors were just keeping me there to charge my insurance.
Oh man.
It was bad, but that happens. It happens sometimes. They wouldn't let me go outside, you know? So that was another thing. Like, they would let me go walk around the hospital, but I couldn't physically go outside. And that was messing with me a lot. Let me tell you, hospitals are liminal spaces, man.
Oh
They are
yeah.
weird.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, not to freak
So
anybody out, but they totally are, yes.
they are. And I mean, you know, just walking, when you're walking around the hospital at 4 o'clock in the morning, it's something.
Yeah.
You
Well, and
know,
you think of everything that happens there, and yeah.
well, and it just, I mean, just even walking the halls, everything looks the same. It's uniform. But it would give me bad vertigo. And I just think that that was probably, it's probably mostly psychological. But, you know, sometimes I'd be walking around and I'd get so far away from my room. And I'd be like, I need to hurry up and get back. I'm like in the middle of nowhere in the hospital. If I collapse, nobody's gonna find me. You know,
Wow, yes.
so I'd walk back. But Anyway, so the aftermath of all that, it was different. Nobody really visited me. That was another hard thing. I had no visitors. I had one. And so like all your friends and family, I mean everybody that you've ever known, you call into question, you're like, look, I almost died and you wouldn't have ever seen me again. And you didn't take that opportunity to come see me. You just question everything
Oh,
that
I'm
you've
sure
ever
it's a
known
real
about anything.
life changing, It's like stepping outside, totally outside of your norm and looking at everything from a different angle. Yeah, it's gotta mess with your head.
It was tough, and it definitely sent me into some type of depression. So it's not really depression, definitely an existential crisis that I am still dealing with, but on the upswing on now, because it wasn't that long ago. I was already having an emotional crisis at the time that it happened to begin with, so that didn't help things. Then I started looking into like near death experiences and how people cope. And, it wasn't, most people's stories are more traumatic than mine. I'll say that. Mine wasn't that bad. Some people really have
Well, it was
died.
still pretty serious,
It was when I went to my doctor, my regular doctor. So you get out of the hospital, they want you to go to your regular doctor. So I did. And, she's just giving me the rundown. Have you had any this symptoms or that? Or, and I said, no. I said, all things considered, I'm pretty healthy. And, she just kind of shook her head and laughed. And she said, she's like, yeah, despite this bullet wound in my chest, I'm still pretty healthy. Because that's just the attitude that I have. I'm just, even when I'm dying, I'm still having a great time. So,
At least you have a good attitude about it.
well, you got to. And I think that's what, I mean, honestly, I think that's probably what had me go for, I lived with this for like almost a week. I mean, it was really bad. You normally don't. Usually when you have DKA, you have a lot of other symptoms. You have throwing up and I mean a lot of other weird stuff. And again, the high blood sugar is the tall tale sign. I didn't have any of that. I just had a full stomach and weird burps and I couldn't breathe.
Wow. That is really something.
Yeah. So go to the doctor. Get checked out for that thing that you don't know if you should worry about. You should worry about it.
Yes.
because much like I learned, it's treatable being type one, I will likely never go into DKA again, as long as I am taking care of myself and or unless I get very sick, that can happen too, but
Yes. Well, that is fascinating, though, should I tell you?
you.
Oh. Wow, I could probably be here for an unlimited amount of time, but we don't have
Sure.
an unlimited amount of time, and I do have to kind of wrap things up. I'd really like to thank you for being a guest tonight. It's been very interesting. Where is there anything else you'd like to share with the audience before we close things up?
Yeah, sure. Of course, you can find my podcast on Wednesdays. We Talk Weird anywhere you listen to podcasts. Beasts and Beyond is also under that same feed. So if you follow the On Wednesdays We Talk Weird podcast, you can find Beasts and Beyond, which might be more your thing, if you don't like a banter type podcast. If you do love banter and you like immature 12-year-old humor, listen to the Wednesday show. The humor is subpar, but the facts are supreme. So definitely, definitely come check that out. You can find me on social media, Facebook, Ashley Hilt. And if you happen to be in the area, March 2nd at the Oasis Convention Center, the Frogman Festival. I will be there all day long. Again, I have bright red hair. You cannot miss me. And I think that's everything.
All right. Well, hey, it's been a fascinating almost 2 hours here and been really interesting. We've covered a lot of topics and the banter is great, by the way.
Thank
I'm
you.
a fan of it. It may not be everybody's cup of tea, but I like it. And
I like
I
doing it,
heartily
so.
endorse, heartily endorse everything that you're doing currently. It's really interesting.
Well, thank you.
Yes, yeah, my pleasure. Folks, my special guest tonight has been Ashley Hilt, friend of the show and active in many areas. Thank you for listening. This has been The Weird Part. I'm Vincent Trewell. Good night.